Du lytter til Playmaker. Playmaker er bragt i samarbejde mellem DBU, Divisionsforeningen og Syddansk Universitet med Mediano som mediepartner.
He helped me to understand the game better.
I try everything to be as successful as possible.
What I love in football, it's a team sport.
I can't believe that. I can't believe that. Football, bloody hell.
I efteråret 2020 udgav Divisionsforeningen teknisk rapport for 3F Superliga 1920-sæsonen med fokus på spillemæssige og taktiske tendenser. Playmaker har løbende sat fokus på rapportens indhold, og denne episode af Playmakers podcast tager således også sit udgangspunkt i et af rapportens temaer. For i 3F Superliga så man i 1920-sæsonen flere hold operere med højt pres som en strategi, og dermed følger dansk fodbold en tendens, der også gør sig gældende internationalt. Men hvilke overvejelser kan der ligge bag presfodbolden? Hvordan udfører man det i praksis? Og hvor hurtige og dygtige er vi i Danmark på området i forhold til vores internationale konkurrenter? Det er nogle af de spørgsmål, vi stiller i denne episode af Playmakers podcast. Her medvirker cheftræner i FC Nordsjælland, Flemming Pedersen, sammen med Alexander Sorninger, der er tidligere cheftræner i Brøndby IF og en række tyske klubber. Vært på episoden er Troels Bæk, der er tidligere træner og sportsdirektør i flere forskellige danske klubber, og i dag blandt andet arbejder som foredragsholder og podcastvært. Sammen diskuterer de forskellige aspekter af presfodbolden i Danmark og sætter de et internationalt perspektiv. Inden på playmaker.nu kan man læse afsnittet om presfodbold fra den tekniske rapport, og desuden downloade hele rapporten. Mit navn er Martin Davidsen. Den her episode af Playmakers podcast er tilrettelagt og produceret af Troels Bæk og udgivet af Playmaker.
Velkommen til den her episode om den tekniske rapport, der er lavet i forbindelse med slutspillet 2020. I den her episode vil vi fokusere meget på presspillet, som er en af de overordnede konklusioner, der er at finde i den rapport. Derfor bliver episoden afviklet på engelsk. We're going to do this in English, because we have an international panel today. Flemming Pedersen, head coach of Nordsjælland. You are international, not only because you are in a club with a strong relationship to international football due to your ownership and academy in Ghana, but also because of your past being a coach not only in Denmark, but also in German football, in the Bundesliga with Mainz, and also in British football in Brentford, right? So yes. That is one of the reasons why you're going to speak a wonderful English. And also one of the reasons why we didn't want to do it in German, because you said you had to practice a little bit before. And also you, Alexander Sorninger, you're international coach, not only because you're German in Danish football, but also because you coached in many levels in German football, including the Bundesliga. So today in this room, we have quite a broad experience gathered from all kind of levels in international football. And as we sit here, I can turn my head and watch the pitch in Farum Park, because, or right to Dream Park, because that's where we are situated. So please welcome both of you. Flemming, just a small start. What's on your mind in these days? What's your work going to be concentrated on?
Oh, of course, we have to finish the Superliga. Still 4 games left. So today we did the post-match analysis from the game yesterday in Aalborg, and now we are looking forward to play AGF. Then we are looking at our under-19 players, which players should start with us in pre-season next season, and with the management team, we are always looking at our organization, our structure. How should it look with coaches, specialists in our different teams. So always, working and try to be in front of the time.
Mm. So the infrastructure, so to speak, of yes. The training environment.
Yes.
Aye. Great. And Alex, can I ask you what's on your list in these days? You have your house in Solrød, still having your family with you in Denmark. What's on your list these days?
I watched Frozen, the Disney movie, with my little one. So it's more about the private things. Then I was in Germany, Germany working for German television, a new show which is called Match Plan. Very, very interesting for coaches, not only analyzing the game afterwards, being, as Fleming said, one step ahead. And that's what I'm doing right now whenever possible. So I was there two times now. And beside that, of course, I'm still watching international football, not so much anymore, Danish football, very much English football, and of course, German football.
And maybe for some other talk someday, that could be because you are maybe orientated towards that, those kind of leagues, but that's not on the topic today. So let's start by explaining why I asked the two of you to take part in this one, because as far as I can see, you would be not only great interpreters of how to play with a high pressure, but also, as I understand it, you do it in quite different styles, and maybe we'll find out later, maybe for different reasons. We don't know for sure. You do, but I'll have to ask you to find out if I understand. And Fleming, I know you have, we discussed a little bit before we started this recording, that you have a number of different positions in your team, depending on what kind of pressure you're going to produce, which is, in my understanding, a rather great flexibility in the way you want to do your high pressure. And first of all, flexibility is another conclusion in the report, beside of the high pressure as a strong tendency in Danish and international football. But the flexibility seems quite important to you.
If you, just to get in, if you see flexibility as a strength, it's always a question of football. If you are successful with knowing exactly what you're doing just in one way, for example, FC Co, for years and years and years and years, they were always just playing the 4-4-2. We played our 4-3-1-2, changing sometimes in a 4-4-2, without forgetting that the kind of new three back now is a big challenge also for us coaches. But I think the flexibility doesn't mean necessarily that you are better in something. That's at least my opinion.
So now we're already into a discussion, maybe, yes. Because I'm not surprised to hear that from you, because I've been next to you in the days we were in Brøndby together, and I saw that alternative loss that you had a very strong argument or a point in never change, because otherwise you might not be good enough in what you do.
But not just to that was not the question now, but not just to show somebody I'm better than the others. It's just about, in football, everything is, except you have in some situations, another plan, like you guys here in Farum. You also want to be successful, but you also want to produce players who can be even more successful in the future. That is, of course, one thing. But if you football is just orientated on being successful, and whatever it needs to be successful is totally fine. And if it means stay in your structure, It's one option to be successful. Sometimes it's better to take a close look on the opponent. If you're maybe a team who is not able to challenge the upcoming opponent in the way they did it so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your point on the flexibility discussion, Fleming?
It's because we want to develop players to play as a complex game as possible, because we need to win, of course, but this club, we also need to produce players that can play on a higher level, so that's why we are doing this. But of course, it's a balance, because it's a methodical way, and if you change too much all the time, that can also confuse the players. So it's very, very important from the start here as under 10 players that the development we take it step by step in the academy, and then when they play the first team football, then we can quickly change.
But my concern, because I've been following the discussion whether the demand for high flexibility is going to be for the benefit of the game, for the benefit of the players, or the benefit of for the coaches, because in some games it seems like the coach's idea is much more clear than the player's understanding of it, and having this development, and I think even in the Champions League report from 19, they also stated that the games in the Champions League were much more flexible, and the tactical aspects of the game, even during the game, was much more flexible. A lot of coaches changing their either formation or even more so the style during the game. Right now in Denmark, we see it more from game to game, that depending on the opponent, the decisions on how to produce the game has been more flexible in the last season than it has been before. But what's your point on this? You already said the players could be more confused, maybe, Fleming. And I know, you, Alex, you tend to have a more clear plan rather than...
Yeah, I think it's a sign of strength all, also. If you are... People sometimes are arguing that our way of playing has no plan B. If you are not really good in your plan A, you shouldn't think about plan B, because then the plan B is the same rubbish. If you're naming the a report of the Champions League, who won the Champions League the last time?
Mm-hmm. Quite clear.
Bayern München with a 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 all the time. Mm. So it's footballs is going in waves, up and down and up and down, and sometimes you need more flexibility. Sometimes a team wins with more flexibility. Sometimes France with a very defensive way of playing, even though they have at that time maybe the best offensive players in the world, they won the World Cup with a very defensive orientated way of playing, with pretty much going into a transition game, which would not be my first choice if I would have had these kind of players, but they were unbelievably successful at the end. So it's always, I think you always need to analyze, make a decision, and make this decision clear to the player. And of course, the quality of the players are always a reason why you should do something. Also, what Fleming already mentioned, I think it's very important that we at a certain level, and that is of course also in Denmark, maybe not so much in Germany, or for sure not so much in Denmark, you should fill up the toolbox of the players. Mm. And that is necessary afterwards for the players if they want to make it into the next league. And that was also something I was not fighting for, but when I was talking about the development of the young players here in Denmark, if they want to make it to Germany or whatever. And then, of course, it's a difference if you're talking about building out average players for the rest of their life in the Danish Super League, or if they should make it into maybe the first league in Germany or England or Spain or Italy.
But that's actually quite interesting, because over the years I heard many coaches receiving Danish players, international coaches receiving Danish players, praising them for being flexible. Maybe that's more a mental thing rather than a tactical thing. I'm not quite sure. But they all always said that the Danish players were very flexible, adjustable, able to fit in to the game plan or the environment. Have you ever heard any of your colleagues talking about Danish players like that?
Just in Germany, it was always the coaches were always happy receiving Danish players because of their mentality, usually of their working mentality. But I think they are pretty much similar to also to Germans. They are clever. I think it has something to do with their education in general. I think it has not so much to do with being more flexible than others.
So it's rather
also some of the players not making the way in early ages to a bigger league. I think some of them also had problems with the mentality in the bigger leagues. Maybe it was also, I'm just thinking about Emre Mor, for example. I think you might know him better. Because of his quality, he should have made it. Mm. But I don't know where he's playing right now.
He's playing in Celta Vigo.
Okay. Is he a starter?
No, I think he was in the start of the season.
He went from Dortmund to Celta Vigo, or wasn't he in Turkey?
And then he was, then he was on loan.
Yeah, but so it's I think it's a mixture. It's not only being flexible, it's so much to make it abroad. It's so much about details. Coming to the right club, coming to the right coach, coming to the right coach at the right time, that he's able to use you as a player to involve you in the existing squad. There are a lot of reasons.
But I would say that the Danish league is a tactical physical league, that a tactical the players are good and can play in different systems styles.
With the ball or against the ball?
I would say both.
I was almost shocked when I came to Denmark and the pressing, gegenpressing we played with Brøndby was looking like an vehicle from another star. I was really, because in many, many other countries it was just state of the art. It was just, that's what you need to do.
Hmm.
And then the how they handle this pressure. We spoke before about the different systems. When I came to Denmark, we played with a 4-3-1-2. Nordsjælland with Kasper played with a 4-3-3 or 3-4-3. And that's mostly it. All the other teams played with a 4-4-2, and we were really, if I just remember our first game against Esbjerg, also the clearness of some results at that time were mostly created because of this high intensive pressing, gegenpressing game. I was really a little bit surprised about the time it took until many of the teams find solutions. Therefore, I don't want to blame the Danish league, but if we're talking about tactical flexibility, I think the teams need to have this weapon loaded
to be able to play against aggressive high
and also pressure. Play it by themselves. I cannot remember so many teams, Fleming, please correct me, but except of, again, Nordsjælland, who else played with a high pressing at that time? That maybe in some situations Lyngby with David Nielsen, not Midtjylland at that time, not Copenhagen. So there were not so many teams playing with a team orientated high intensive defensive organization.
No, I totally agree there, especially with the intensity, because when I came to Germany with Kasper, that was my first experience with, okay, wow, this is intensity. That's where I learned about intensity. But looking back at that time, also in Premier League, there was no intensity. There was maybe Pochettino, but he was the only one. So the world of football has developed a lot and has been inspired by German football in that sense.
Did you change the Nordsjælland game after you came back from Germany? I mean, you didn't come back at the same time, all of you, Kasper, and you came back later, right? But did you change the style of pressure since the German experience?
Yes, I remember Kasper. I came back to Nordsjælland here. Almost a year later than Kasper, but Kasper had already implemented, because of course he was inspired by the German way and wanted to press even higher and with higher intensity, and so he brought this with him from Mainz and put it or not put it into the style of play, because the style of play was, we still wanted to press high, but now we had experienced, okay, we need much more intensity. Mm. Yeah.
If, correct me if I'm, no, I'm not wrong, because this is a very subjective interpretation, but maybe you have another interpretation. What I've seen over the years is, I think I have the understanding of the high pressuring kind of football being the reaction, more or less, to the Southern European, Spanish, maybe even Dutch possession game. And since they were so strong in keeping the ball and building up the game with a lot of passes, some teams, especially German teams, developed an even more aggressive, high-pressuring game. I remember the games, correct me if it's Dortmund versus Real Madrid and Bayern versus
4-0.
And Bayern versus Barcelona, and they killed them both. And in the semifinals of the Champions League, was that in 15 or something like that? And then they played the final. And that reaction actually seemed to me like they found a tool to stop the domination of possession football.
Yeah, it was always based on the experiences under Lobanovsky with Dynamo Kiev, with more or less Russian in the 60s. Mm. Afterwards, I was really surprised when I heard that. Also in Scandinavia, in the 70s, there was a big culture of playing with a high pressure, with a high intensity. And afterwards, especially in Germany, it was in the early 2000s with Ralf Rangnick in Ulm, and afterwards in Hoffenheim. I think when let's call them experts. When experts are talking about Red Bull football, for example, it's not Red Bull football; it's Ralf Rangnick football. Because Muniz, for example, was at Red Bull Salzburg before, and he was playing the Netherlands way of playing football. By the way, also the Netherlands with maybe one of the most intensive playing styles with the ball. If you remember Ajax 2018, when they made it into the finals with Man United, they played on an unbelievable level against the ball. Mm. So that was also the story how Jürgen Klopp was more than getting noticed, was burning for this new way of playing. When he lost with Dortmund 2000, it was in the first season of Hoffenheim, I think it was 2008 or 2009, when he was playing with Dortmund against Hoffenheim, and they kicked them out of the stadium. I think it was a 4-0 or something. Mm-hmm. Then he said, "In 3 or 4 years, I would like to play in the same way." And afterwards, Klopp was in Mainz before he came to Dortmund.
Yes.
But I think the way of playing they played in Mainz was also very much based on the time during Jürgen Klopp, right? In the 2006, 7, 8, around that.
Yeah, when Klopp was there.
Yeah.
Yes.
But also afterwards, I mean, when you came down there.
No, he was. Yeah, I think Klopp was playing with Mainz maybe against Hoffenheim. I'm not quite sure, but he was really inspired about this way of playing. And then things developed. I think today I was talking a lot with English medias now because of the development of Red Bull and also making it to the semifinals in the Champions League right now. Jürgen Klopp in England in the Premier League. Ralf Hasenhüttl, another coach from this Red Bull Cosmos in England. So I think it is simply state of the art. You don't need to play this way, and there are different ways of playing it. I think with Brøndby, also with Leipzig, also with Stuttgart, not so successful, but we played it on a very, very high level regarding the intensity. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of possibilities to adjust it, especially with the ball. But against the ball, correct me, Flynn, but you need to have a team weapon against the ball. It's not just about playing one versus one over the complete pitch, and if somebody is slipping out, you're losing a game 1-0.
So if you should, just a simple question, what is the main reason for you to choose this kind of football, the high, intense, pressuring football? What is the first and foremost benefit you're looking for?
If you're considering the different groups of of people being involved in football. It's the players, it's the coaches, it's the fans. These are for me, staff. These are for me the most important ones, and I think it's so unbelievably exciting for all of these three groups, the fans. Not all of them are coaches, so some of them just can identify a good game if there's a lot of action. And I said that a number of times. What shouldn't happen for sure is that you're going in the stadium, you have to go to the toilet, and you're missing the only interesting situation. You know that. That's why you're smiling. You know that quote, and you're missing the only interesting situation. That should not happen. Then we did a bad job. You can do that over a period, and you can be successful with that because you have a good organization in the defense, because you have one or two good strikers, because you're good with the in the set pieces. But that is not what I'm looking for. Then we are talking to the players. I remember when I was coach of Brøndby, and we had one or the other player. I don't want to say names because then I'm blaming coaches, but we had players coming back from the national teams, and one player said, "It's so boring playing there if you're playing that style, because they are always involved. You have simply a higher number of actions per minute." Mm. And that means you can make more mistakes, but you can also be in more situations successful. And the last one is the coaches and the staff, and the Aaron, our athletic coach, was impressed about how we use the players from a physical point of view. He's American, so they are a little bit strange. Mm. Forgive me, Aaron. Therefore, but also the Christian Engel, our psychologist, he needs to talk more with the player, involve the players more with our way of playing, convince them in some situations what we are doing here. So everybody has simply more effects of the football game, and that is why I love it. There's just also it's always a question for us. It's the players have so many questions about that. Where do I have to go if the situation is like that? How are we reacting on this? Why are we acting more? So you can be simply a better coach if you are more involved in what you're doing.
So the reason why you play this kind of football, and you did that even before you joined Leipzig, isn't got nothing to do with Red Bull, has it? I mean,
I think in Red Bull with the support also of Ralf Rangnick and the possibilities of asking so many real experts, mm-hmm. in the club, made it clearer. My toolbox was bigger afterwards. I created this way of thinking. I also had the benefit that I, as a player, I had some of the coaches which were former players of Ralf Rangnick.
Ah, yeah.
So they brought me into this way of playing. And I also, I mean, everybody is looking what fits to him, and I was simply successful with my first club playing kind of this way of playing with another system. We played a 4-2-3-1, if I remember. Also with the second club in the fourth league, and sometimes we also played with a midfield pressing. So not so much with a high pressure. To make a kind of perfection in these high pressing, if it's possible with the high pressing to be perfect, because if it's not perfect, you look like a fool, and my 3-year-old daughter can analyze it. But if you are kind of perfect, then of course it helps you also to convince people. For example, Teemu Pukki, he said he learned so much in that time, And Timo is not thinking about how he's handling the one versus one defensive or how he's tackling in the own box. It helps him a lot to become a better striker. And that is also interesting that you are playing against the ball, and playing against the ball means for a lot of people playing defensive, but it's not. If you're winning the ball 20 meters in front of the of the opponent's goal, and you can bring that closer to the to your strikers, then they will make more meters, and especially more high intensive meters.
So if I correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, and already understood it as we met the first time some 5 years ago, even more maybe so, 6 years ago, I don't know.
You're still looking good.
you have this more of a, this is your convince, you're convinced about this way of playing because it's much more active, it's much more involving, and for the spectators.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
It's everything. Against the ball, I'm totally convinced. Mm. With the ball, there are a number of options. Mm.
What about you, Fleming? The reason why you added over the time of years even more so, the high pressure?
First of all, I agree very much with Alex. But first of all, we are doing it because we want the ball. So we want to win the ball back as quick as possible because our game here is built on the game with the ball. So first of all, we ask ourselves, how do we want to score goals? And these, what will that demand from the assist and so on? Then we work backwards until we ask ourselves, okay, how do we want to win back the ball when we lose it? So that's our game model in headlines.
So in order to make sure you win back the ball in the shortest amount of time, you have added the high pressure as much as you can.
Yes. Exactly. Okay. And also because we want a fast game, because if we have to develop players, then as Alex says, then there's a lot of decision making. There's a lot of actions, and that will develop even better decision making, because if we want to develop really good players, then we need to play as fast as game as possible.
We always said give the opponent thinking tasks.
Mm-hmm. Be in the head of the opponent.
Yeah. Get into right. And that, I think that is also the biggest difference to Nordsjælland, that is their game is built on the game with the ball. Our game was built on the game against the ball. Also because of a reason, because all these guys we are coaching right now on that level are football players. So they become football players because they want to do something with the ball. That could be a reason to continue in the way Nordsjælland is doing it, to start the process with the ball. But I think most of the guys are so good with the ball. And with the ball, the work with the ball is mostly a quality thing. The work against the ball is mostly a attitude thing. Mm. Because it is really, really difficult on that level to tell the players a lot of them are working, how do you say, unseen for the normal spectators. When you're creating a pressing situation, somebody is winning the ball, and this guy is obviously the guy who did his job. But to create this situation, 10 other players needs to do their job unnoticed from the spectators. Mm. And that is difficult because their agents will not tell them, you shouldn't run too much, that another guy is winning the ball and a third guy is scoring the goals. And that is a mental challenge for the players. And if it's a mental challenge for the players, it's a mental challenge for us.
So it's a swarm thinking, accepting being part of a swarm. Yeah.
Right.
It's quite interesting actually, because maybe a little bit... too simple, but Fleming, you talk about a tactical reason to use high pressure, tactical reason in order to win back the ball as fast as you can, so you can get back into your primary game. And Alex, you talk more of a vision of the game, the complete package of being an interesting, much more exciting game. And I remember my opinion about it is when we decided in Brøndby we want to try to play with a high pressuring intense game. It was more a strategic thing. It's more an understanding of the circumstances of the club, the environment, and how
the
things
past.
And how will it fit together? Not too much about the past and how they won in the 90s, but more a matter of what are the exact, precise present situation of this club? Would it fit to a more, you know, bohemian kind of football, or would it be a hardworking, high intense, like the spectators of Brøndby would benefit from?
I followed your words, but I understand it 3 years later when I was fired, because most of the messages I received were from family fathers, and they said, I was never able to explain my son why I loved these clubs so much in the 90s. Until you came to Brøndby and we played the way they played kind of in the 90s as well, with this high intensity. And then my son understood why I wanted to go every second week into the stadium. Mm-hmm. So I understood why you wanted to bring me back to, or I thought that was the reason why you wanted to bring these power football back to Brøndby.
Yeah. And more or less not to recreate the past, but because the present would interact so well with this kind of football. So right now we have three more or less different reasons to want this high pressuring football. And I think if people out there is listening to this and they might be coaches and they want to influence their coaches, it's not like a high pressuring game is the solution for everything, but it's definitely going to be part of either a vision, a tactical maneuver, or a strategic choice, and that will help the players to understand why they do so. But there would be not only benefits from playing a high-pressuring game, there would be risks as well. Some people would say it's too risky to bring so many players forward and you're too easily victim of transition games. How's your opinion on that, starting with you, Fleming, maybe? What's the concern you might have or somebody around you would have when you go into a very intense high pressure?
Yeah, but of course the opponent always have a chance to get out of it. You always need to look at it cost and benefit. If we take an example from this weekend's game where we played in Aalborg, so we want to build the game from our own goal. Aalborg went up in really high pressure against us, and we scored a goal against this where we beat their pressing, and their pressing was really intense in that game. And then their goal in the second half, we had a goal kick again and built up the game, and they won the ball and they scored. So
both goals, both yours and Aalborg's, came out of their high pressure.
Exactly. Yeah. We beat their high pressure, but we also lost to their high pressure. Mm-hmm. And so again, it's a cost benefit. But in today's football, where many teams are very good on the ball, so we need to be good at least at times in the game for the high pressing. Because what if we are behind 1-0? What should we then do? Because the opponents are too good to keep the ball. They can defend with the ball. So if we don't have a plan, if we don't have a high pressing plan, then it can be difficult to win games.
Would you describe the pressure of your team as consequent as the pressure of the Brøndby team Alex coached?
No, you cannot compare these two teams.
No. And if you had the choice to, you have the choice because you can choose whatever you want, I think. Yes. But if you would choose to go as high and as aggressive as the Brøndby team with Alex did, what would your worry be? You played against it, so what were your hopes?
Are you asking how I want to beat this?
Yeah. What would be the reason for you not to copy it? Because there would be some reason for you wanting your pressure, not that pressure.
Of course, if you are very good on the ball, you can always, and maybe you'll disagree here, I think you can always beat a high pressing team, but you need to be good on the ball. We played FC Liefering, a Red Bull Salzburg's youth league team, and I put a team with the same age of players against Bo Svensson, who's a coach in Liefering, and it was 10 days before they played. I think they should play Porto in the quarterfinal, and I would say we beat them easily because they could only press high, but we were too good on the ball, so they left a lot of space in behind them, and we could penetrate on the outside of their two center backs.
No doubt, it's not
a lot of time.
Yeah, it's not a solution. It's not a medium solution. It's a all-in solution. Mm. If you're not really good in that, but as you said, if you are afraid of something, you shouldn't wake up in the morning. No. If you're afraid of something, you shouldn't become a professional coach. And that was the reason why we choose this way of, I'm deeply convinced, because of following the world football, that 100% perfect defensive team, and you're right, I'm not convinced then, if you have 100% perfect defensive team, it will always win against 100% perfect offensive team. Mm. Because you have, otherwise every game would end 12-14 or whatever. But you are in 90 minutes, 55 minutes netto game time, usually it goes with 1-0, 2-1, 3-2, something like that. That means a number of these lot of actions are going into nowhere. Mm. A number of these offensive situations. At 1 minute, every team usually has one time the ball. Mm. So if you follow that consequently, then you should be able to create 55 goal chances in a netto game time per minute. But it does not happen because it's so difficult to come from one side to the other side. The biggest title in world football in the last years were gone because of easy defensive mistakes, individual mistakes, team mistakes, whatever.
But they would not have been that easily made if they were not stressed, if the defensive players were not maybe under a certain pressure.
Mostly, but not always. Mm. Sometimes it was just miscommunication. Sometimes it was a referee's mistake also in some situations. So it's just you were asking about the differences, and Fleming is right. I think we played with a higher risk, with more all in. But the consequence is not only to say we played all in. With this way of playing, I'm telling my team, consequently, I believe that you can do it. Mm. Because otherwise I wouldn't do it. If it just lead to one defeat after the other, I will lose my job. So why should I do it? True. I'm deeply convinced that I have a team, no matter who is this team. I'm deeply convinced that a group of young, open, structured football players are able to play this way of playing football. And that is what I'm doing.
And if you have a plan B, it will weaken plan A. It will take away the power of plan A.
Yeah, but we have the plan A, the plan B with the ball. We also have the plan B with the ball. Nobody noticed that if you don't want to. Nobody noticed that after my first game here in Nordsjælland, we started the next game with a 4-4-2 formation, because I was impressed about the changing of the side from Nordsjælland. So you need to be very clear in your communication with the players, but being very clear means sometimes that if you're doing it a little bit in a different way, the players are asking themselves and each other and us coaches, well, but why are we doing now something different? And then they are not any more convinced. Why are we going now? Back in the Bundesliga, when I was in Stuttgart, we lost the first 5 games. And if we would have lost one of these games, I would have said, why did we lost one of these games? We had the highest number of goal chances. We had the second highest number of pressing sequences. So with all the aspects of my game, they were all perfect. But except 0 points, yeah, is a problem. Yeah. to convince people. So we decided in Berlin to bring them just 15-20 meters back. It doesn't make any changes regarding the principles. But for the players, they are asking themselves, why do we have to defend now a little bit deeper? Mm. So you need to be really careful if you are going all in, if you are explaining things in a special way with all the consequences, that in some situations you might lose options. Could be.
Now, at quite reaching to the end of this podcast. Just two more questions from my side anyway. You can have more things on the table. But the formation of your team, how would that influence the style of pressure you are producing? Because you use different formations most in most of the games and most part of the games with Norshall and Fleming compared to what you did, Alex, in Brøndby, or what you would do in most teams, whether you coach Brøndby or whatever team you're coaching. So what is the formation deciding for you? How would you describe the importance of your formation, Fleming?
Yeah, I both agree and disagree, because when we press in the 4-3-3, then it's also more like 4-3-1-2.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just you're gambling with the 10.
Yes.
You put it more up in front, he's the player who's dividing, or you put it a little bit deeper.
Exactly. That's what, if we call it in the 4-3-3, if we call it 9 pressing, then we move number 9 up. If we want to press from outside and in, wingers pressing, then we move number 9 in.
So it's more similar to your pressure.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So it's just these small changes. Where do we want? So first of all, we want to ask ourselves, where do we want to win the ball against this opponent?
And because of the own strength or because of the weaknesses of the opponent? I think
that's
pretty much the same, like every coach is thinking about, where is a weakness? Where is a pressing victim, maybe on the pitch? Where are the, if you remember, when we showed the players the it's an abstract situation with the systems. Some people are handling it in the wrong way. It's just the formation of the players on the pitch. It's not the interaction of the players on the pitch. So sometimes it is changing within two or three times, changing the side from the players. Then you have out of a 4-3-1-2 or 4-4-2 or 4-3-3, or you're bringing one of your fullbacks and you are defending with a three back for whatever reason. So
formation is starting position.
Right.
It's not exactly the coordination between players.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it gives you the open spaces. In a 4-3-1-2, we are describing the players, where are the weak points, where are the strength. And of course, in a 4-3-1-2, you have usually 8 players in the center track and in the half track. Only one player with the fullback on the wing tracks. And in a 4-4-2, you have the weak side, the weak positions on the 6 and on the 10 of the opponent. So behind the two strikers or behind the two sixes. Usually, in theory, you say the fewer lines you got on the pitch, the better it is for your defending, because you have not so many spaces in between.
Mm. That's quite an important information for any young coach listening to this. The fewer lines you have in your team, the better it is for the defensive work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it also depends on where the ball is, because I agree, when the ball is central, it's good to have few lines. If the opponent, they have a ball wide, it's important to have more lines. Otherwise, they can easily play in between, and the gaps will be too big.
But that's the most important. Where are your gaps?
Yes.
And if you are in the organization, like from line to line, only maximum 15 meters, usually maybe 10 meters, with fast players, the faster the players in the back, the shorter can be the differences, the space in between the lines. So I think in general, if you have only a few lines, then in theory, as a foundation, as a starter, it can help a coach to say, okay, let's create only a few lines to create a good organization in the defense. That in general, if you have more lines, then you might have more players with a shorter distance to the ball.
Mm. Yeah, which is important for the high pressure.
Which could be important for the high pressure. Depends of how you start the high pressure. We still have to make the clear difference between pressing and gegenpressing, repressing.
Mm. Mm. And what's your definition in that clear difference?
Pressing is the starting position when the opponent got the ball.
And gegenpressing is when you lost the ball. Is,
yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we learned after analyzing us in Denmark. We created clearly fewer pressing situations because the opponent is just kicking the ball wide. Mm. So then it's even more important that you prepare them for the gegenpressing. Mm.
Last question from my side. Do you have any vision of how the pressure in not only Danish but international football could develop? Is it, have we already seen the most aggressive or the pinnacle of the high pressure in game, or what would be the next development in your imagination?
I'm sure we'll see even more high pressure with a high intensity, also with even more players working towards the ball, because I think we will see in the future the goalkeepers working higher on the pitch and can be a sweeper in these situations and
in possession, right? In possession?
No.
Against.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like Neuer, for example. In the
defending tier.
In the pressing, and with these, when we also have more athletic, very fast goalkeepers, then they can cover a lot of ground. Mm. So we can have at least one player more working in the pressing.
Allowing a higher and more intense pressure.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
I think in general, whenever somebody's finding a solution, somebody's finding a solution against it. So there are, for me, two options. One showed France in 2018 to more or less eliminate some of the offensive players, taking them out of the pressing and prepare them immediately for the transition. That could be one direction that is going more into this direction. The other one is... we saw it right now with Germany against Spain, in the education of the mm-hmm. of the strikers, that you're creating more pressing machines with your strikers, because right now it's still a striker is not seeing himself as a ball winning person on the pitch. So if you have more, if you educate them more in how positive it could be if they are winning the ball, maybe it's even harder for the defense to come behind these first line. So it could also go into this direction that you are looking not only for these fast strikers who are able to score, but also with the, again coming back, with the right attitude to see the importance of winning ball.
So either more rest attack, like the France team did, leaving one or two, maybe sometimes even three strikers with outside the pressure, just waiting for the transition, or even more aggressive strikers pressing against the ball.
Yeah, with the strikers, of course, also because of the swarm thinking, also the rest of the team. Mm.
Great. This is going to be very interesting for most football persons in Denmark. Anything else on your mind before we close up, Fleming? Did you give all you had to?
Yes, only we will see still many different kinds of styles depending on culture, and not only culture in different cultures, but in different countries, but culture in or style of play in different teams in the same leagues. Exciting times we are waiting for these exciting times.
I agree.
Yeah, I think it's also important if you are a young coach that you're filling up your toolbox with as much as possible. If people are talking about pressing, There are so many options of pressing. Heinkes in the successful Bayern München times, he was playing more or less with a single pressing, just isolating or attacking only the guy with the ball. Jürgen Klopp wanted to surround the guy with the ball and winning the ball from the opponent. Pep Guardiola, also Bielsa in some situations, are controlling passing lines. It has to fit together. It also has to fit together with your plan with the ball. We are playing, our high aggressive pressing in the center track because we have the majority of our players in the center. Pep Guardiola's plan against with the ball is passing from side to side as often as it needs to bring one of the individual unbelievable strong wingers into a one versus one situation. And therefore you need to know that then it's a question of the very much of the rest defense, not so much only in the gegenpressing because you are spreading out pretty much. So for all the young coaches out there, listen to what people are talking about football, but don't try to make every move a move for yourself, because maybe it doesn't fit the defensive work against the ball doesn't fit to your offensive work or for your transition moment or what you want to do when you win the ball. Yeah, so there is find your own plan, find your own option to put it all together
and fill up your toolbox.
Yeah, and don't think you as a 19-year-old under 15 coach, the next step should be a Superliga coach. Give yourself the time.
Good advice. Thank you, Fleming. Thank you, Alex. It's been a pleasure. And I wish you all both great success, Nordsjælland, and with Frozen, or whatever comes up for you, Alex. Thank you so much.
Vi er nået til vejs inde i denne episode af Playmakers podcast. Medvirkende var Alexander Zorniger og Flemming Pedersen, og vært var Truls Bæk. De diskuterede forskellige aspekter af presfodbold i dansk og international fodbold og tog udgangspunkt i den tekniske rapport, der blev udgivet af Divisionsforeningen i efteråret 2020. Inde på playmaker.nu kan man både læse afsnittet om presfodbold fra den tekniske rapport, samt downloade hele rapporten. Mit navn er Martin Davidsen. Den her Playmaker-episode var tilrettelagt og produceret af Truls Bæk. På genhør.